Coming up, a Sad Styles production.
Hello and welcome. My name is Mikey Aaronworth, signing on to the Sign Off of Framework Podcast for yet another week. It is the forum for all the stories you didn't know you wished you knew about the world of sports and sports marketing. This is yet another classic re-release. We're continuing through the summer months with some re-releases from some classic episodes that we had launched in the past, but didn't have quite the following as we have now. So we wanted to put this back up in the forefront, buy ourselves a couple months to put together some nice episodes coming up in the future. As I mentioned in last week's episode, we do have at least one more major episode coming. And if there are any stories or any sorts of themes you want us to focus on after these summer months, hit us up, signoffpod@framework.com. We'd love to take all that into consideration. This week's episode that we're bringing back to you is episode 22 from August 19th of 2021, almost a year ago. And this is actually coming just a week or so after the anniversary of Eddie Shack's passing. And the reason why we wanted to bring this episode to the forefront is it focuses on the project of interviewing Eddie Shack, compiling his life stories, and putting them into a book, which Framework actually published, called Eddie Shack, Hockey's Most Entertaining Stories with Ken Reed. That's right. It was written by Ken Reed. It was a lovely process going through, talking to Eddie, talking to all of his friends and family, and sort of compiling his life and his life stories from his perspective and the perspective of everyone around him into this book. It's something that every so often we go back and read some of the stories from to remember how great of a guy Eddie was. It gets a little bit emotional. This episode does towards the end. We loved Eddie. He was in our offices multiple times every week, and we miss him. So I don't want to get in the way of the episode. So without further ado, here's the episode. We'll see you on the other side. Hello and welcome. My name is Mikey Aaronworth, signing on to the Sign Off, a Framework podcast for yet another week. And if you're watching us on YouTube, you will see it is a lonely room today. We are taking another break from having a guest because, listen, when you have guests as good as you, Dad, Brian Aaronworth, president of Framework, why do you need to get anyone else? We're going to be sitting down and talking about something that we've been asked quite a bit about, and it's Framework's foray into the world of publishing. We had an episode earlier on that had more to do with the gifting side of publishing, working with bands like U2, Madonna, Black Sabbath, et cetera, et cetera. But we also have one major publishing kind of credit under our belts, and that is Eddie Shack's biography. If you're watching on YouTube, once again, holding up a picture of that book over there, Eddie Shack, Hockey's Most Entertaining Stories with Ken Reed, with is a little bit of an understatement. Ken Reed was integral in writing this book. He wrote the whole thing with Eddie Shack, sat down, got all the stories, did a lot of the interviews and tours as well. And that's kind of the end result of the book that we have. But I want to talk more about the overall story. I mean, this book was not necessarily supposed to happen. There already existed a biography about Eddie Shack when it came time for you to pitch, Dad, the idea of putting something together. So why don't we just very generally talk from the outset of why Eddie Shack and what he meant to you before you decided to move forward with something like this, like a book?
Well, just to be clear, this book was never planned.
It just, right. Just much like my birth.
Jeez. Okay. Lori, if you're listening. No. So basically, over the years, Eddie Shack kind of became a friend of the family. In fact, he had a home just down the street from my father's on Bayview Country Club, and he used to drive by in his...
Did he used to live...
Yeah, right.
I didn't know that. Yeah, right. So the listener wouldn't know this, but that's basically my childhood home. I didn't know that Eddie Shack lived running distance away from there.
He was on the 12th hole. My dad was on the putting green. So you had to pass my dad's home to get to Eddie's home. And I mean, there's stories of Eddie Shack was an amazing individual. But so he used to drive by in his blue dune buggy and stop and talk to my dad in the driveway. Just, you know, hey, Harry, how are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. And they started to become friends.
Now, actually, how about this? Before you get into it, there may be the odd young listener that doesn't know who Eddie Shack is. Eddie Shack was a very famous hockey player, not just for his skills on the ice. He played for several different teams, including the Toronto Maple Leafs, won four Stanley Cups, retired, obviously, but a kind of a Wendell Clark type But with a little bit more of a of an edge. They called him the entertainer for good reasons. Right. He was a very funny player on and off the ice. What most notably, you know, as a podcast that loves talking about marketing, was one of the first players to sign a marketing deal, and it was for Pop Shop. You can look up those early commercials. A man who couldn't read, was illiterate, and found his way not only into hockey, but into the world of business in a way that most other players, I'm talking like 99% of the other players of his era, could never have done for themselves. So you can look him up and do a little bit more research on it.
Or just buy the book.
Or just buy the book. There you go. And we'll talk about how to get that book. It's actually currently available on Amazon. I'll show that to the camera once again. Eddie Shack, hockey's most entertaining stories with Ken Reed. So why don't you continue then?
So Eddie, and you need five shows to cover Eddie Shack, and you still wouldn't get it done. But Eddie would drive by, and he became friends with my father.
Right.
And when my father retired, I set up an office here at Framworth for him so he could, you know, basically have a escape from, you know, hanging around the house with my grandmother.
I noticed how you decided
your
to
grandmother.
Tread carefully there. Yeah.
But anyway, so he'd come in every morning and he'd help out, you know, once a week with the payroll or whatever it would be, and just to give him, you know, something to do. And then he'd play golf every day and go leave at noon and off he'd go. Eddie came by and became friends. So when Eddie lives not too far from our company here, and he started coming in the office to say hi to my dad, it's always like a 15-minute ordeal where he'd walk into the office and sit down and just shoot the shit with dad, tell stories. I could hear him laughing. My dad at the office next door. And then he'd come and see you, and he'd come and see me.
Well, only because you mentioned the quick 15-minute ordeal in the beginning, and he just came to visit my grandpa, your dad. And that's kind of it for the beginning.
Right.
It was just kind of this thing where, you know, people in the office were like, hey, did you know Eddie Shack is here? And he would end up coming here every day. But at that point, he was still somewhat of a stranger to me. I don't know how much he would come to see you. Actually, funny story, the way in which Eddie Shack and I became close, you know, similar to the Charles Barkley story. People are going to start to think I'm an asshole, but I'm not, I promise you. But I remember having an interaction with Eddie, and he was in my grandpa's office, and they were talking about another player. I won't say the player's name, and about some of the issues that Eddie and this player had, you know, dating back to whenever. And finally, you know, Eddie's sitting there and he's leaning back in his chair, and I'm in there talking to my grandpa and to Eddie, without knowing him too well. And Eddie's sitting there, just like typical Eddie, the big mustache. He's got a cowboy hat at this point with a painting of himself on it, with signed by all the people. And he's just sitting, like, larger than life personality. And Eddie's there. And I'm like, but I just don't get it. Like, you guys have enough in common, you know, like why can't you guys just, you know, get past it and start to like each other again? And he's like, well, this person, he's just so full of himself. I just can't deal with it. And I'm like, Eddie, this is coming from the guy who's wearing a hat with a photo of himself on it. Like, get over yourself. What are you talking about? And then his big uproarious laugh. And I think it was kind of from that moment on that he took to me a little bit.
Well, you know, it's funny because in the early days when Eddie used to come and see my dad, you know, I was trying to build a business. So as much as I grew up in his era, well, I was a kid. He's a little older than I am, but I was there for the four Stanley Cups, watching religiously at the age of whatever, five or six on. And, you know, he was almost a distraction for me because he'd come in and I just wouldn't have the time to sit down and talk to him. I had things to do. 2009 rolls around, my dad passes away, and Eddie was kind of lost because Eddie's retired. So he'd have his routine. He would go from our company over to Costco, grab himself a hot dog, sit and entertain all the people that go by, be wearing his cowboy hat. Everybody would recognize him, not the kids, and the fathers would tell the kids story. And then he would go somewhere else. He'd go to Pusateri's, and then he'd get some free stuff from Pusateri's. Anyways, he'd do his routine. When he was kind of lost when my dad passed away, and he would never really wanted to go into hospital. So when my dad was sick and in the hospital, he didn't want to go, but he went because he loved my dad.
Yeah.
You know, I probably so many times in the hospital and never wanted to see another one.
Fair.
With Eddie after all his career. So he started coming in to see me, and that's when I kind of fell in love with Eddie and made the time for him.
Yeah.
Because he had story after story after story, stuff that, you know, we talk about this all the time, is the inside stuff that people don't get to hear every day about what went on behind the scenes. Now, I saw everything that was on the ice.
Sure.
But I didn't see what was going on in the dressing room, the fights that they had between players, between coaches, the issues with management. And
that's almost a sport in and of itself, almost more interesting than what happens.
Way more. I always find that most of the stories people ask me about for different players, the ones that are of most interest to anybody asking are the ones that are unrelated to the game on the ice.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's kind of the premise of the podcast, right? Right. Those are the types of stories we love to tell.
So Eddie used to come into the office all the time and tell stories. Now, a few years back, and I'll get my dates wrong, but let's say it was, 2019, I think it was, that Eddie came in and he was telling stories. And I said, you know, Eddie, one day, a lot of them are the same stories told over and over again. They were ingrained in my head. I said, but you got to get these down in some kind of form. He said,
give us an example of one of the stories. Give us maybe one that used to stick out to you. One that he would tell you every week, but that you looked forward to hearing regardless.
Well, a lot of the jokes and things that he would tell, and they were pretty off-color jokes, you know. Yeah.
Elephant in the room is Eddie was notoriously a very... Oh, how to put it? He went to the beat of his own drum. He was very politically incorrect, and that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, especially in the modern day. But he was one of those almost grandfathered in characters who could get away with a lot because I think at his core he was a very good person. But yeah, do you have any specific stories?
Well, I mean,
there's
story after story, but okay. he would tell about how he came to Toronto because Red Kelly refused a trade. So he was supposed to go to, I forget how it goes, but he was supposed to go to Detroit, but Red Kelly wouldn't go make the trade. So anyways, and I'll get the story straight because it's been a while since I've heard it, but he goes back and says, well, because Red Kelly refused the trade, I got traded to Toronto. He hated the coach. Oh, so here's a good story. So the coach in New York, he didn't like very much. And so they were having a bad streak in New York. And he said to the coach had a team meeting. And he said, whatever you guys want to do, I want to have a meeting and you can say whatever you want. It won't be held against you. We just need to clear up this mess.
Risky thing to say when Eddie Shack is in the room.
So everybody's, well, we got to play harder, coach. We're not playing tough enough. And Eddie just came out and said what it was on his mind, which was something to the effect, well, you know, you don't know, you're not playing your best players, you're not doing, he was very critical of the coach.
Yeah.
Within a couple of weeks, he got sent down to the minors.
Oh, it was a trap. It was a trap. When your coaches, mentors, parents are asking you for the truth, treat that with a little grain of salt. That maybe it's going to come back and haunt you.
The stories, I mean, how he used to carry hockey sticks in the back of his car in case the police pulled him over. And then they would get a signed stick and to let him off the ticket of whatever it would be.
That reminds me of the story we had Wendell Clark in here not too long ago. And he told the story about, I just kind of floated the question of, you know, being a superstar in Toronto, were there any benefits? And he said, well, I won't say that there were any benefits, but I'll say this. The first time I got a traffic ticket was a week after I was traded to Montreal.
Well, here's the funny thing. Eddie was sitting in my office and I said, you got to get this down in writing. He said, well, I've already done a book. And I said, yeah, that was 10, 20 years ago. And I said, you know, you got to stay relevant. And he said, well, I'm all for it. Let's do it.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I don't write books, but I'll finance and publish it. And I don't know. I mean, I've done books before, but they were all pre-sold to Live Nation.
Sure. Like the gifting books that we talked about in an earlier episode. Yeah.
But I said, I don't know much about it, but I'll figure that out. But we need somebody to write it. And then I thought about, I just talked to a good friend of mine who was on the podcast before, Ken Reed.
Right.
And episode I phoned him up and I said, you interested in writing a book about Eddie Shack? He wants to do a book. And he said, I'm in immediately.
Yeah.
Didn't ask about money. Didn't ask about anything. He just says, I'm in. I want to do this book. And so Ken was in. And he said, well, when do you think you'd want to launch it? And I think this was in April. And I said, well, I think it should be good for a Christmas launch. And he said, so Christmas of the following year.
Yeah.
I said, no, Christmas of this year.
Yeah.
I said, Brian, it's April. We haven't started. He says, you have no idea because Ken's published 3 or 4 books anyways. He says, it'll take a year and a half to get into play. I said, no, I don't want to wait that long. We're going to launch it in November. Can you do it? He says, if you think you can publish it, I'll do my best to write it. I got to clear the slate of other things that I'm doing. I said, okay. So we get Ken to start writing the book.
I think it's important to note that one of the only reasons he agreed to a timeline this significant was because of his respect and love for Eddie Shack, knowing the stories that he was going to get to tell.
Eddie has, we'll go into some of that, but bottom line was we decided to do the book. We set the target goal for November. I had Richard McCorkle, who was a good friend of mine, an amazing creative layout that he did. He designed the concept of the book, which is cross between a coffee table mm-hmm. book and a story of Eddie's
yep.
career. And so it's a really good combination. And Richard came up with the concept of having Eddie tell a story. And then sometimes his recollection wasn't that good. He's getting up in age. So we'd ask his wife. And so there were little sticky notes on different stories. Like it would look like a sticky note
sure.
that was printed on the page. What Norma said, Norma
right.
being his wife. And she would say, no, Eddie
yeah.
was, he saw it that way, but it was totally wrong. And so she would correct wherever Eddie went off track.
And that was a great, clear the track. There goes Shaq. Exactly. The best way to put that is like, if you've ever seen pop-up video, like the old Much Music or MTV thing where, something is happening and you get a little pop-up and it's like, well, actually the way that this was filmed was blah, blah, blah. Because
right.
Eddie starts to, like the movie Big Fish, just kind of reimagine the stories
right.
in his own head. So it's a really neat method of clarifying what could have been hyperbole and is instead just Norma bringing things back down to earth and saying, no, he thought this is what happened. This is kind of how it happened. And Norma, an incredibly significant person with regards to the NHL and especially relations players to
yep.
the league in her own right. We'll have her on in yes. a future episode, Eddie's wife, but she's done an incredible amount for player relations within the NHL.
The NHL
as well.
Alumni.
Yeah.
She was part of the whole lawsuit going back. But so when we decided to get the book done, Ken did numerous interviews, and then we did a lot of research into photos. We went through Eddie's photo albums and tried to find unique photos from his career going right back to junior hockey and how he was an entrepreneur back then. The big thing about Eddie was he was illiterate, and he used to brag about it.
Yeah.
I'm illiterate, he used to say. I'm illiterate. I can't read or write, but, he found a way to get by. And at the end of his life, he was a very wealthy man.
Yes.
And not from hockey. It was just about his skill set and how his investments. And he got taken advantage of in a lot of those investments.
Yes. I think it's worth clarifying that most of his nest egg began because of his hockey career, but he was able to turn that into much more. Most of the money he made was as a result of owning a golf course or being a part owner in a golf course. But it's important also to say that even past his playing days, he was very good at leveraging his celebrity to broker new deals.
He was one of the first to do that.
Yeah.
Eddie had a personality bigger than life. And so he wore the cowboy hat, which began and when he was at Biltmore, which was a cowboy hat company, and paid him to wear the hat around. So
right.
that's when he started wearing then the cowboy boots. And I think we have a game used cowboy boots that Eddie wanted
yes.
to sell at some point. I forgot he gave them to me. I found them the other day in inventory where he signed his cowboy boots.
He kept saying game used.
Game
Eddie,
used.
What game did you wear these boots in? You wore them dancing and you want to sell those with your signature on
he
it.
He even had a pair of cleats that or a pair of boots that he put golf cleats on so he could wear them around the golf course. It was crazy. Crazy. And he was a member up at Devil's Pulpit. He had his own golf course. Anyways, so many of those stories. But the interesting part about the book was that I think the most fun I had was we did manage to bring it out in November.
Right.
And it was exceptional. And then the tour started. As I didn't know anything about marketing book. I phoned different book companies like Barnes & Noble and Indigo, and I had a great conversation with Indigo. And he said, Brian, the buyer said, you realize that, you know, we never bring out a book in November that you try and sell me in September.
Right, exactly. It would be like selling, like if there's a many people might not know this, but anytime you see a Father's Day sale at a like a big box retailer, that was essentially decided 8 months ago,
right,
minimum. Usually you book 1 year for the following year. So especially for something like a book, that's...
Well, Barnes and Noble said, laughed at.
Yeah.
But I got a fellow on the phone at Indigo who was a hockey fan, understood that there was great potential there. Almost sight unseen, he decided to take the books in store. And then I said, okay, the one thing I can support you with is Eddie wants to go on tour.
Right.
Like he wants to be, this is bringing him back to life because he was such a big icon for many, for sure, many years. And he was kind of falling out of limelight with new players coming in and all that. So I started arranging a tour, and Ken Reed helped me, you know, with Rogers, and we were on all sorts of Hockey at Noon and different shows there.
Didn't you do like breakfast television?
A typical day. And this is Eddie at the age of, what was he then? Close to 80.
Yeah.
We started the day I picked him up at 4:30 in the morning, mm-hmm, to go to breakfast television. And we got there in the green room, and Eddie was having a coffee, and he was ready to go. They put him on breakfast television. I just watched a show the other day because I taped it.
Oh, nice.
And he lit up the room.
Yeah.
Sat on the couch with the hosts and just went to town and laughed and told stories. And then that segment of the show is over. He gets off, and I'm standing there with him. And then the next segment starts about something happening in Africa or whatever, and they're discussing wildlife. And Eddie walks right on the set on camera. And then the host of that segment started laughing and invited him to sit in on that. And then he started, and they all wanted photos with them.
Yeah.
So that was the day. That's a start. From there, we head up to Rogers. And we do an interview in the morning with Jeff Rahoman.
Yeah.
And then that was a segment. And then we did Hockey Central. And then we did, then we went over to my son's restaurant for lunch at Pig Out Barbecue, Chris.
Over at Spadina and Harbor in Toronto. Best barbecue in the city.
Yeah, it's great food. And Eddie loved it. And he entertained there, signed autographs for everybody in the restaurant. And then we went back to Rogers, did a show in the afternoon with Stephen Brunt, I think it was,
and this is all in one day.
Wait, this is it. I drive him home and say, Eddie, I've got I go back to the office, because we have to be at Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment at Real Sport to do an autograph signing there in the building before the hockey game.
Oh my God.
Night. And that's at 5:30. So I go back to the office.
Which is about the time I'm waking up, I think.
And now I'm back. So now I pick him up. We go downtown at about 4:00. We're a little early. So we go into Real Sports Bar across the street. He wants a glass of wine, get a quick bite to eat. And of course, now he's talking to everybody, signing autographs. It's before a Leaf game. So everybody in there is Leaf fans. And we're sitting at the bar having a great time. Then I take him in. He does an autograph signing. It was supposed to be prior to the game in the what was the ACC at the time, I believe, and line up, signing books, kissing kids, hugging babies, doing the whole thing.
Wouldn't kiss the babies. You'd only hug them.
Right.
It's one or the other.
Anyway, so he does that. Then they say, well, you know, we couldn't do it because the game was starting. So he said, well, okay, we'll come back at the end of the first period.
Sure.
We go up to the alumni box. Bob Nevin's up there at the time. We're having a great time up there. Back to sign autographs in the second period, in the first intermission. And then we had finished. So I said, well, do you want to watch the rest of the game? We watched another period up in the alumni box. Actually watch the rest of the game. Come back, and I'm driving them home. It's now 10:30 at night. I can't keep my eyes open.
Yeah.
Eddie is in the driveway and he's insisting I come in for a glass of wine. I did refuse. I said, Eddie, I can't do this anymore. We did this every day for a month.
The craziest part about it is I remember, you know, I was working full time at Frameworth at the time and seeing you come and go in the office and you looked exhausted because the schedule, you know, it wasn't just here. You'd be flying out to the East Coast to do some tours and signings over there.
What a great
story. Which, yeah, I want you to tell that one in a second. But the reason why it's crazy is because you were this exhausted and Eddie is, what, 15 years older, yeah, 20 years older, something along those lines.
15,
And he, it just felt like he was having such a great time that fatigue wasn't a factor or something like that. He just, it wasn't work to him. Whereas, you know, I know you probably enjoyed it touring for your first book that you had published.
But it was work.
But it was work. It was exhausting. This was Eddie being Eddie in the most Eddie fashion you could imagine.
Well, Eddie and I were very close, and you know, we knew about each other's families. We knew each other, but the good things, the bad things. We had a lot of time to talk. But when Eddie, when you're driving around with Eddie, he was a tough guy. Like he thought a different way, right? So you weren't going to convince him not to do it his way,
right?
So, but some of the fun things that happened in and amongst the things that were. Drove me crazy. I took him out to the East Coast.
Yes.
And we did a number of autograph signings there with a good friend of mine, Brad Hartland, had a number of bars and restaurants out there. So we did that tour. We did CBC East Coast in the morning first thing. Their morning show. And then getting into the Toronto airport.
Yeah.
So Eddie was not shy about anything. Eddie had prostate problems when he was younger. And he had to wear, this is Eddie's marketing. He had to wear, adult diapers, when he was traveling around. And he would say, and he said to me, came into my office one day, he says, you know, I got a great idea. I said, what's that? He says, well, everybody's ashamed, you know, when they get, they're embarrassed as adult, they got to put these adult diapers on.
Right.
He says, let's do a commercial.
Yeah.
You phone up one of the diaper companies and you tell them, I'm going to stand there in my diaper, my cowboy boot, and my cowboy hat. And I'll say, I'm Eddie Shack and I love these diapers. And he had the whole script all laid out.
Yeah.
Now he couldn't read the cue cards. He'd ad lib, but it was a great idea. And
fantastic.
I unfortunately never got around to doing it, but that would have been a home run. Can you imagine him?
I'm glad you brought it up because it would almost feel, I think to some listeners that when you mention, because I know you're getting into a story with this, but you mentioned that he was in adult diapers. It may seem to some listeners like we're telling tales out of school or something like that.
But he wasn't embarrassed about
anything. No. A very, very honest and open person.
Yeah. So then so the first thing we get into the car, I get him into the airport. We're walking in the front door. He said, get me a wheelchair. I said, okay. I mean, he's capable of walking. No, that'll get us around faster. It'll get us through places quicker.
Right.
Now, he did have a hard time walking. Right. His feet were pretty
bad.
His
knees were rough, too. He had, I think, two knee surgeries.
And he had some bad problems with his feet at the time. So we put him in the wheelchair, and I'm wheeling him to the gate or just to get into security. And he's talking to everybody. How you doing? And people, hey, there's Eddie Shack. He made sure everybody saw him, acknowledged him, and said hello to everybody.
For sure.
And we get to the gate, and everybody was a sweetheart. He's an old school guy. Politically correct is not one of his best features.
No.
But he'd be talking to the security people. Hey, sweetheart, how you doing? I got to get through here. And we got escorted right. I've never been through security so fast. And it was all him. I'm pushing him around. And we get him on the plane. It was just a great experience. We land in Halifax. I start the whole routine. Went from place to place. And one of the afternoon signings, so we did this long day. And then about 4 o'clock, we were supposed to be at a Rogers Communication store.
Yeah.
Where they sell
phones and an
outdoor mall downtown Halifax. And Eddie comes in there, and it was one of the few places that I don't think they promoted it very well, but there was one of the few places that didn't have anybody. Like there's one guy waiting. So I don't think, maybe they put up a sign and that was it. Eddie sat there for about 10 minutes, And I had to get on a conference call with my with somebody in San Francisco. So I turned my back on him. And the next thing I know, I said, where'd Eddie go? And the store manager said, he left. I said, what do you mean he left? He's supposed to be here for an hour. And he says, I know. He says, what if somebody comes in? And I said, where did he go? He says, well, across the way. It was an outdoor mall. And across the way, there was a restaurant. You could see the bar inside.
Yeah.
And there was Eddie sitting at the bar drinking a glass of red wine.
Yeah. Okay.
So I went over there and I said, Eddie, they paid us to come in here. They bought so many books so that you could do the signing. He said, I don't care. He says, that's an embarrassment. They didn't do the marketing. I'm not sitting in that store, an empty store. He says, tell them if there's somebody who wants a book signed, come over here and I'll buy them a glass of wine and we'll talk stories. And so we sat there and ate oysters and drank red wine. And then the store manager understood. And then next thing you know, we had to go to the Moosehead game, the Halifax Moosehead game.
This is after the afternoon.
After that.
Now, before we get to the Moosehead game, I do want to mention, like, you know, that to that story, it may seem like Eddie's just being difficult, but, you know, he was a prideful guy. He was the entertainer. And ultimately, I think you'll probably agree, the reason he didn't want to sit there wasn't because he just was tired or fed up. It was kind of embarrassing to sit down and have no one there.
And he was right.
Yeah.
If the store didn't do the job to promote him, then it's a slap in the face to him, making it look like, you know, he's not popular.
Sure.
Because I'll tell you what, the next thing when we went to the Moosehead game, he didn't stop signing autographs the whole game. He had lineups for people and again, the red wine and the coffee cup, you know.
Yeah.
Like, Brian, get me in red. He loved his red wine.
Yes.
And so we spent the rest of the day there and then, of course, went back to the hotel. And so not only was it moving him around, but trying to keep up with him.
Fair.
Especially when I wasn't doing the chauffeuring. Then I had no reason not to drink with him.
Yeah,
you can have a red wine too.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah. That's those stories out in the East Coast I was jealous of. I went to school out in Halifax, you know this.
Yeah.
And I miss that city quite a bit. The Mooseheads games were always a lot of fun. Great fans and a great atmosphere out there as well. You talk about chauffeuring. One, just a little palate cleanser of a story before we get into the book itself. I remember, because he was coming to our office so much, I would often see him driving his car around the area. And I got out of a Tim Hortons and I was waiting at a red light right behind his car, waiting to turn left. And you talk about, you know, going to the beat of your own drum. He just didn't see a reason to do things unless there was a specific justification for it. Red light, no cars coming either way. Drives straight through the intersection, makes a left turn. I was just baffled. You just don't see that very often. And I saw him in Frameworth. I was like, Eddie, did you realize you ran a red light? He's like, there were no cars coming for miles. And, you know, I sit back and I think about it. Not that I'm advocating for running a red light ever, but it kind of made sense. Like, there was no cars ever, no repercussions. He made his way through. And that is kind of a microcosm of what Eddie Shack's life is. You know, it doesn't matter what the rules are. He's going to do it the way he wants to do it. And that got him to where he was.
Some of the unique things about the book. So I was up north at my cottage and one of my friends up there had said, you know, I told him we were writing the book and he says, oh boy, do I have a Eddie Shack, great story for Eddie Shack. And I said, really? He says, yeah. He says, I was going, this is back in the day. And not advocating drinking and driving and all that stuff at all. But unfortunately, it was done back then. But it did create some interesting stories. So he says, I was going into a place. It was a popular bar back in the 80s and 90s. He said, the Chicken Deli.
Oh, I remember that bar. Yeah.
Right.
They used to have great trivia there.
You're right. And they had bands there. And a lot of the players, the old timers, used to go. Bob Nevin was frequently seen there. And Eddie Shack would go in because Carl Brewer, who was a Maple Leaf, a great Maple Leaf, his brother Jack owned the bar.
Makes sense, because I remember there was this thing where Eric Lindros every so often would be spotted there as well.
It was like, you know, because of the history of Carl and all the ex-Leafs. So my friend Steve, he goes, he's getting out of his car, parking on the street there, Mount Pleasant. And all of a sudden, he sees Eddie come walking across the street. And Eddie, as is documented in the book, one of his businesses after hockey was selling Christmas trees.
Yes.
So he had a pickup truck with the Christmas tree hanging out the back. The stump of the tree was going backwards. And Eddie had, as my friend tells it, Eddie backed up his car. The Christmas tree went right through the radiator of a car on the street behind him. And then he just took off.
No.
I can't imagine him not knowing he hit the car. Yeah. But he just took off. So Eddie, so my friend looks at it and he says, oh my God, that was Eddie Shack. And he says, maybe I should call the police. It's kind of like he did some damage to that car. Maybe he knew about it. Maybe he didn't. But, and then he said, nah, it's Eddie Shack. and he left.
See, so, here's the thing about Eddie is that is a horrifying story for, like, objectively.
For the guy that owned the car, especially.
But here's the thing. Eddie would do such outrageous things and was so beloved by so many people. You can almost envision a situation where the guy gets out to his car and says, Eddie Shack dropped a tree on my car and is like kind of okay with it because of that. Like is a trade-off. The funniest thing about Eddie Shack, you mentioned the Christmas trees, and there is some of that about in the book, and we'll get to the book in just a second here. But the number of times Eddie Shack comes up in conversation, it's basically 50-50 whether people are going to say, I loved watching him play, or my dad loved watching him play, or the other 50% chance is our family bought a Christmas tree from him one year. Like that is, it's like he was almost had a monopoly on Christmas trees. Everyone wanted to get, like, look, if you're going to get one, why not get one from Eddie Shack? That was kind of his premise and it worked.
And the way that all evolved was Eddie went up north, talked to the guy, he'd buy all the trees. Then he'd arrange a place in some parking lot of a big shopping mall, like at Bayview and Shepherd. And he'd set up there and they'd let him do it for free because it was Eddie Shack. And then he'd pay the guys and he'd send them inside for coffees and that. And Eddie would be there selling the trees.
Yeah.
In fact, he sold me one that I never even put up. I didn't even want it, but he sold it for our bar Gardoonies across the street from Maple Leaf Gardens. And he convinced me to buy this 12-foot tree. And it just leaned in the corner for the whole winter but I couldn't say no to Eddie. He was that good a salesman.
That's amazing.
But, you know, Eddie, the other side of the book that's really interesting is I have a lot of friends in the hockey business, and I would phone around and say, look, we're writing this book. So the reason I told the story before I get on to that with Steve's story was when Steve told me that story, I thought, what a great idea. I'm sure there's people out there.
Right.
That have.
Steve is the guy who told you the story about the tree.
Steve Francisco. He was a friend of mine from up at the island. So when he told me that story, I thought, what a great idea. We should run a contest for people that have stories like that, because I'm sure he's touched so many people.
Sure.
And so we did. And we were inundated with great stories.
Yeah.
And we picked 10 of them and we put those stories in the book.
That's fantastic.
And one of them came from a guy that I know, Fraser Neek, who I think was reiterating a story I told him about how Eddie, we had a big event here with Wayne Gretzky.
Right.
And Eddie was in the audience as a guest of mine. And he sat there and we had a Q&A at the end and Eddie put his hand up and Wayne looks out and says,
I recognize that.
That's Eddie Shack. And Eddie says,
that's the guy who wears the adult diapers.
Right. Yeah. Eddie says, Eddie, do you have a question? He says, yeah, Wayne. He says, I just want to know, how many Stanley Cups have you won? And Wayne goes, well, I've won 4. And then he says, so have I.
It was crazy. So anyway,
it's amazing. So that was one of the stories that Fraser put in. So we had 10 stories and each one of those got an autographed book as a thank you.
Yeah.
And they were published in the book. And the other thing that happened was I had phoned around to various people or talked about the book. And I said to some of the players that I know, would you mind, telling a story about Eddie for the book?
Right.
And nobody said no. I asked. We had so many, I couldn't put them all in. But we did manage to get some of the best ones. Not the best ones, but some. Okay, so Wayne Gretzky wrote a story for the book.
Yeah.
Bernie Perron, who was our guest last week, wrote a story for the book. Frank Mahovlich, George Armstrong, Bobby Hall was good friends with Wayne. Or with Eddie. And so they had little neat little stories that they told about Eddie behind the scenes.
Now, speaking of stories about Eddie that made it to the book, you as the publisher actually wrote a 2-page introduction, essentially a foreword to the book. Now, Was that always part of the plan, or did that come along the way? When did you decide that you wanted to, rightfully so, insert yourself into the narrative of Eddie's book? Well, and what was your thinking behind what you wanted to accomplish by doing that?
Well, I wanted my picture in the book. I'm even taking flack from my daughter, Nicole, because she's the only family member, I think, that we didn't manage to get a picture in there, and that's an oversight. So we had a couple of events here with Eddie. No, the reason I wrote the foreword was he was such a special guy to me, and I wanted to tell everybody how this book came about, which I've kind of told everybody here now. It just came about out of nowhere. You know, really, to the most interesting thing about it, or the most important thing about it, was everybody, including Ken Reed's publisher for his books, said, "Brian, it's ridiculous. You're never going to be able to get a book out there in time." And I said, there was something about it. I said, "I'm not one to procrastinate
for better or worse." Anyone who's worked for you knows this as well. it's exhausting, but without fail, whatever the goal that's been set is reached.
There's a way to do it. And so Ken agreed, Eddie agreed. We all devoted ourselves. We had great work by Richard McCorkle, as I mentioned, the ultimate Leaf fan, Mike Wilson, and Paul Passo, assist. Anybody I knew that could contribute all decided they would help out. We got the book done. We got it in the stores. And I knew that a bestseller sports book in Canada is 5,000 units.
Right.
And I knew, without any stores at all, that I could do 5,000 books out of the trunk of my car as long as Eddie was willing to do it with me.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he will sell the books. Indigo helped a lot, and we have it on Amazon as well. But Eddie and I sold books everywhere we went. I flew him down to Philadelphia to do the podcast Spit and Chicklets.
Right.
And they loved them.
Right. That's a huge one that we didn't. I mean, Spit and Chicklets, obviously an enormous podcast, but they have an episode in their collection that was done as part
and
of
Eddie
this tour.
And Eddie didn't know who Spit and Chicklets, but he doesn't follow podcasts, but he had a great time with them. We flew down to Philadelphia and back in one day.
Yeah.
So that was another day. The beauty of getting this thing done, we went on tour for the month of end of the November all through December, and then we were going to pick it back up in January, and Eddie got diagnosed with cancer.
Right, right.
So he had throat cancer, and they went through treatments, and then he had all sorts of issues where he fell, and he was hospitalized, and I even heard stories about how he had days to live, and I got really...
A few times.
Yeah, I got really upset with that because, you know, people are rushed so hard to be the first to break news, even if it's not accurate.
Well, I think you're referring specifically to a tweet that went kind of viral.
Right.
That you, through Frameworth's Twitter account, replied to essentially set the record straight, because this was months before... Eddie had passed away, and it was essentially almost an obituary notice from the person.
And Eddie was in pretty rough shape at one point, but he rebounded.
Right, right.
But, you know, it was like Eddie's very close to passing away, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and I just thought, boy, you know, that's not fair.
Yeah.
And it was a very well-respected sports writer and a good one. He just jumped the gun a little bit. And I talked to Ken Reed about it as well. And he said, you know, everybody in our business needs to, you know, is trying to get the first, you know, to break the news.
Right.
So that was all fine. We got that straightened away. And then he passed away. I think it was in July. And it's unfortunate because he couldn't have the fanfare, the funeral that he deserved, et cetera.
Well, that is definitely unfortunate. However, I think the silver lining is that, you know, everyone always talks about the biggest celebration you're ever thrown is at your funeral, but you don't get to experience that.
Right.
He didn't know what was coming. No one knew what was coming, but that almost makes this tour that much more special.
I get emotional when I think about it because we spent a month together just prior to him getting sick.
Right.
And virtually every day, some were very trying for me.
Yep.
I'm trying to run a business and be with Eddie. And he, you know, there was times where he got a little grumpy and tired.
Sure.
And I got a little grumpy and tired. But for the most part, spending a month with Eddie, hearing the same stories and new ones, and then talking to his wife, Norma, and being part of it with Richard and McCorkle, who designed the book, and Ken Reed, who wrote the book, spending all that time. But Eddie was front and center in the limelight.
Right.
He was back to being on stage, the number one guy.
Yeah.
And that was just before he passed. He never would have had that opportunity. And if it wasn't for me saying, we're doing this in November, instead of the following November, the book never would have been done.
Well, that is one of those things that you never could have known when you planned it.
No.
But it is true. Had you not forced, the elephant in the room that we're kind of dancing around is the fact that Eddie would have passed away before we could have finished the book.
Right.
And once, even let's, you know, never mind finishing the book. I think for him, the most important thing was the tour. And, you know, yes, the book exists. That's fine. But he's illiterate. He's not going to read it, right? Like, that was never the point. The point was for him to have a resurgence in the public eye and to be able to go on this tour and to be the entertainer again, which even had we been able to publish the book, you know, we realize he's sick. Okay, Eddie, let's get these stories onto paper. Let's publish it. There's no way he was going to be doing the tour. Had we been a couple months later, not to mention COVID happened immediately after.
The most important thing about this book was not that it was published. That was great, and it exists, and everybody's so proud of it. The most important thing for me was to put Eddie back on that stage that he was in for so many years, where people had kind of he faded off a little bit, and then he was back there front and center doing his shtick, and it was amazing to watch. People loved him. A whole new generation of people found out about him because you couldn't miss it. He'd be in an Indigo store. He'd be at a hockey game, and
even on
kids
TV, he'd be on.
The kids are going, who is that guy?
Yes,
and why is everybody crowding around him?
Yeah.
He had a smile on his face the whole time. He was so gracious with everybody. And so that's the most important thing. Second most important thing was we have a bestseller.
That's, yeah.
Eddie's book sold over 6,000 copies.
Yep.
And that makes me feel pretty proud of the accomplishment that we had. But more important than all that was just the time I spent with Eddie.
And for him, you know, getting back into the entertainer, on the first page right next to the introduction, you have a quote from him. I'm the entertainer. I'm the entertainer of the century. I'm holding that up in front of the camera if you're watching on YouTube. And he got to be the entertainer once again before, you know, everything kind of shut down with COVID. And he was experiencing some sicknesses as well. But with that, I think we should start tapering off. But I'm wondering, is there a favorite story you have from the book? One that say you have to pitch the sale of this book to someone, and you say there are lots of stories like X. What's one that you can pick? If you need time to think of one, I have one that I love.
Okay, go ahead. You tell me. I mean, there's so many. I'm blanking out. I mean, I'm just amazed at the things that he did and said.
But this is it's like Netflix syndrome, where the hardest thing to do is decide to watch one thing because you have a million different options. My favorite story, though, that Eddie Shack has ever told me, I've told this before on the podcast, but in a different context. Eddie and Gordie Howe had quite a rivalry. I mean, there's no question Gordie Howe, better goal scorer, better remembered in terms of his overall play in the NHL. But on the ice, their physical rivalry was notorious. And, you know, as is the case with a lot of players in the league, they went and became friends off the ice. You know, whatever happened on the ice stayed on the ice, and that was fine. He was on vacation with Gordie Howe, and they were drinking beer all day. I can't remember where they were, but they started to get into it a little bit and started talking about their rivalry and how dangerous it was becoming for the both of them. And Gordie Howe extended the olive branch and said to Eddie, listen, let's make a deal. You don't hit me anymore. You don't run me anymore on the ice, and I won't run you anymore on the ice. And that's not to say that they couldn't, you know, play rough against one another, but there was no more hitting with an intent to hurt. And he says, Eddie swears, from that moment on, they didn't run each other. And there was a moment where Eddie could have and chose not to, specifically because of that conversation. That idea of brokering a deal outside of the hockey rink and bringing it to your day-to-day play was fascinating to me.
Well, he used to talk about how he knocked out Gordie Howe.
Yes.
He knocked out Stan Mikita.
He'd
list all the guys that he'd knock out. But one of it, my favorite, the one story that you hear the most of, because he'd sing it as he comes in the door, is "Clear the track, here comes Shaq."
Yeah.
It was like you'd hear him come down the hall and "Clear the track, here comes Shaq." It was a number one hit on the Chum Hit Parade back in the 70s.
Yeah. Which would be kind of like our Billboard top.
Right.
Yeah.
A Chum Hit Parade was like what we all listened to when the Beatles came out, and you'd see how long it lasted as number one. And it was based on sales and popularity. I don't know how they did it, but you'd go to Sam, the record man, and get your chum chart. And they wrote a song about "Clear the Track, Here Comes Shaq." And it was number one for a number of weeks. And he'd sing it. But then when he'd come in, he'd say, "Yeah, it was number one until you know who knocked me off that list." And I knew, but he'd tell everybody, he says, "Nancy Sinatra, these boots are made for walking, knock me off the list. Isn't that great? Ha ha ha."
If there's a song to knock you off the list, Nancy Sinatra's "These Boots Are Made for Walking." And in Eddie Shaq's case, these cowboy boots were made for walking and for selling, apparently, according to him. As long as they were signed, they were game used. I love that story. There are so many good ones in there. One last one that I want to tell, because we are running short on time, but this is a story that makes me laugh every time. We've mentioned before, Eddie was illiterate, couldn't read, couldn't write. Although he was good at signing his name, he could do that. But if you wanted him to sign your name, you had to write down what he did, and he almost wrote it down as symbols. But he was on the ice, and he was getting chirped by the other team for not being able to read or write. "Oh, Eddie, you can't read, you idiot. Like, get off the ice," this and that. Game goes to overtime. Eddie Shaq gets a pass, scores the goal, skates by the opposing bench, and says, "G-O-A-L, goal." I love that. I love that story.
And one of Eddie's fun, well, one time line is very, it's not, I mean, it's a little off color, but he was proud of the fact that he came from Sudbury.
Oh, yes.
And he says, "I come from Sudbury." He says, "Only hockey players and hookers come from Sudbury." "Which team did your mother play for?" I've heard that joke 1,000 times,
but
whenever I think of it, it's still funny. The one thing I will say about the book is there are some amazing, it's an easy read.
Yes.
Great stories, off color, behind the scenes stories, what happened in the dressing room, what happened when they were on the road, his pop shop, all those stories are in there. It sounds like we're trying to sell the book. We're actually, I don't even know how many copies there are left, because I'm not probably going to do a second publishing, but...
So well, they're available on Amazon if you want to check them out. If you
can find it.
Eddie Shaq, Hockey's Most Entertaining Stories. I'll hold that up to the camera once again. It is available. I believe it's also available on Frameworth's website, frameworth.com, if you wanted to go get it. But as you mentioned, this is not an attempt to sell the book. There aren't very many copies left. We just wanted to have an episode dedicated to Eddie and to sort of outline the absurdity that surrounded the publishing and the touring of this book. This whirlwind tour was very impressive. I'll lead off with a quote that Eddie loved. And I think everyone can take this one to heart. We talked about how he could be a little bit off color, how he could be a little bit politically incorrect at times. But Eddie would go out always saying, "Don't behave yourself, be yourself."
Right.
And I think everyone can take a little bit of that within reason, but no one did it better than Eddie Shaq. So, Eddie, thanks again for everything, wherever you are. Miss you, of
Here's
course.
Eddie. Yeah, good friend.
So thanks for listening. I'm Mike Aaronworth. With me, as always, Brian Aaronworth, president of Frameworth. And this is us signing off. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we made it to the end of yet another episode. Thanks again so much for joining us. You can find videos of all of our episodes on YouTube by searching the Sign Off Podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at Frameworth Sport or Instagram at Frameworth Sports. And hey, if you're not sick of me yet, you can find me on Twitter over at Retrograde Mikey, or you can always find me embarrassing myself over on Instagram at Aaronworth. The Sign Off is a proud product of Fadu Productions and Sad Styles Productions. Executive producers, Mikey Aaronworth and Andrew Bascom. Until next week, this is Mikey Aaronworth signing off.
Furnished by Sad Styles Productions.
Get into it.